This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And boy, he'd love to have Shedeur Sanders. He'd love to have the Dion suite right there in the stadium. It's all going to be cool when all the Buffaloes end up in town. Or is that all a bunch of you-know-what? Jeff Phelps, Jake Volnick, in for Andy today. Meredith's taking your phone calls, 216-474-0092. And Dan Menigan, freshly groomed with a haircut that I've never seen Dan have before. Running the board, running the show, telling us what to do. It's a serious haircut. I love it. Anyhow, all the buzz, Jake, is starting to sound Travis Hunter. Do you get the same vibe there, and does the vibe mean anything?
Well, I'm definitely getting the same vibe, right? Like, you come from the, here we go, time number one, Colorado Pro Day. And
let's just call it that. Maybe not.
But you go from there. You obviously have the conversations. They look, these guys, they send what? Was it eight guys?
There was an eight-person contingent, yes.
So you're clearly interested in at least one, if not both. And with the national buzz that's been going around, it feels like it's a lot more Travis Hunter at two than it is Shedeur at two, but at least you're interested in one of them. And there's obviously a whole thing that goes around with it. Is it a smokescreen, whatever? I think if you send eight guys out to Colorado, you probably are at least semi-interested in one of them. So, yeah, I would say that it feels a lot more like Travis Hunter right now than anybody else. But I don't know that I'm completely buying that it's not just you were there. It was Friday. We're 3 days removed. And in a week's time, there won't be three reports from different talking heads that say something else.
The scary thing to me is this, and you knew this was going to happen. I think it is happening. And it's just the way this thing goes. The longer you go down the road here, the more that you know you need a quarterback, the better those quarterbacks who are available are going to look to you. And my fear here, Jake, is that one of these quarterbacks becomes so inflated over what he might actually be. Now, you hear some people talk about Sanders, and they say, this guy, you hear completion percentage, you hear accuracy, you hear poise in the pocket, you hear leadership ability, and you're hearing all the things that you really want to hear about a quarterback. Then you look at draft rankings, profiles, draft grades. I mean, Kenny Pickett and Shedeur Sanders have the same draft grade from the NFL.com analyst, 6.30. Everybody's thinking, Kenny Pickett, are you kidding me? Can't have Kenny Pickett as the starting quarterback. Sanders has the same draft profile ranking. Does that mean anything? Who knows? But it's just that overinflated, it's like, okay, well, because he's the top guy here, we have to go for him. And I'm getting the feeling, just, and again, it's all just people speculating. It's just starting to feel like they're sliding in the other direction and not taking a quarterback there, which means they have a decision to make when it comes to a position player there.
Yeah, I mean, then you're between Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter. I don't know. I don't know that I buy the inflation, though. And the slide, to me, between up and down feels so much more media-driven than it is, obviously, team-driven, where everyone slides back and forth. Like, every Friday on my show at nights, I have Max Chadwick, college football analyst for PFF. He has Shedeur Sanders as his top-rated quarterback. Still above Cam Ward. Still sticks to it. Says, I think he's it's a very slight edge. I give him the slight edge. Like, people that are sitting there breaking it down, it's just grades all over the place based on like he's very accurate, but does he do things that wow you? Not necessarily. But I think that's almost what the Browns need. But if you're going to go non-quarterback, yeah, you're between Travis Hunter, you're between Abdul Carter. Today feels a lot more Travis Hunter.
Is that just because everybody was in Colorado?
It has to be. And
I think so too.
He's visiting with the Giants, I think, today. I think he was with them yesterday. He's back with them in New Jersey today or tomorrow. So it's like it almost feels – and he's already met with the Browns. He's already met with the Titans. So it's now just the natural progression of – oh, they looked at, they went to Colorado. They looked at Travis Hunter. They seemed like they liked Travis Hunter. And okay, now Abdul's out of the picture. I'm telling you, next week it'll be the complete opposite. If I'm not mistaken, the betting favorite for the Browns is still Abdul Carter at 2.
You think so?
I'm almost positive. That's what it was going into Friday, and it was by a hefty margin.
All right, let me bounce something off of you. Dano, I want your thoughts on this as well. Best defensive players in the NFL last year. Myles Garrett?
Yep.
Yep.
Micah Parsons?
Yep.
Yep.
Cowboys were 7-10. Browns 3-14. How much did the best defensive players in the NFL help their teams? Teams that did big things. Eagles, terrific offense. Lions, terrific offense. Vikings, terrific offense. Quality wide receivers. Buccaneers won 10 games. Terrific wide receivers. Rams, Puka Nacua. Is the game-changing talent at a wide receiver spot more valuable toward winning football than a stud defensive lineman? And I'm the guy who would mainly usually lean toward the stud defensive lineman. And this is the part of this to me that's a huge decision for the Browns. If they don't go quarterback there, I think it's big. Are you more apt to find a really good defensive end to play on the other side of Miles on a team that so drastically needs wide receiver help? Or would you go ahead and take the defensive end and think you can find a wide receiver? And I've got an argument for that one in a second.
Yeah, I mean, I would throw to you sort of the counter-argument, though. You look at those teams, and you name teams with great offenses,
yep,
and it's not necessarily the individual player, but what do the Eagles have? A dominant defensive line.
Yeah.
What do the Lions have
while they were healthy? And a dominant offensive line as well, right, in Philadelphia. They built up the both lines.
Yeah, they're a Super Bowl team. They were not fully complete, but they were about as close as you can get to it. They took down the Chiefs. The Lions healthy last year. Za'Darius Smith on one side, Aiden Hutchinson on the other side, a good defensive line. Like, even the Vikings, while it's not necessarily individual name talent as much, it's a strong defensive line. Like, I think that the individual player impact, it's no question. I mean, if you get a stud wide receiver, yeah, he's going to put up numbers. He's going to put up points, which the Browns desperately needed last year. You needed points. But if you're building for not just almost the wow factor, almost the, can I get the incremental upgrade instead of making sure I have the best thing possible? Like, Abdul Carter could be that piece. You locked up Miles long-term. You get Abdul Carter with a dominant defensive line. You could have the start to taking down what is the strength of all of these AFC teams, which is a good quarterback.
The idea, Dan, of having Miles and Abdul Carter together for 5 years, that's appealing to me. But I'm wondering, well, is that the answer to winning football games?
I mean, why? This is going to sound dumb. Why wouldn't it be?
I'm not sure. That's what I'm asking.
So if you look last year, so you went through, okay, the Tomlin people. Who won Defensive Player of the Year last year? Patrick Surtain.
Yeah.
He was a cornerback.
Yeah.
Played for the Denver Broncos. Team with a really good defense where he completely shut down one side of the field. And an offense that was good. Better than we thought.
It was better than you thought it was going to be because Bo Nix was better as a rookie than you thought he was going to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Thus proving the main thing that we all sometimes forget when it comes to football. It is the ultimate game of 53 guys all pulling in the same direction, and it is the ultimate game of depth. The minute you have that depth fall off, that's when you get yourself in trouble. What's the story of the Philadelphia Eagles? Depth. The amount
depth
of guys
all over the place, yeah.
Exactly. And the amount of talent that was all over that team. So whether you want to go about it, your defense is in better shape than your offense. Yes. You need to beef up the offense at some point. Yes, but if the guys aren't there to do it in the first round of the draft, that's why you've got all the rounds and the picks in between there as well, to help you beef the offense, because the story of this is depth, and the story of this is strength. And if you could build up a strength that you have with depth, that's how you become a successful NFL team. So yeah, I have no issue whatsoever of them going, all right, let's take Abdul Carter and let's roll. I have no issue whatsoever going, man, our cornerbacks are pretty darn good. What if we add another one? I have no issue with that as well, because I look at that again as adding more depth, because that's the story of the NFL.
Isn't that sort of the Andrew Berry philosophy too, is that we're not going to sit there and hunt positional need? Now, we haven't seen him draft at number two.
Yeah, that's what they say. And I think that's the way to go, except you could use a defensive end, and you certainly could use a wide receiver, especially one who's talented enough to give you plays on the other side.
But I think that's it. You're looking at them not even as which one of these guys is going to make the bigger impact by positional value. Oh, if we get a great defensive line, does it make you that much better? Or if we have a great wide receiver, but it's actually the individual player. Does Abdul Carter present more wins down the line, even if they're looking 2 years into the future, if they have that grace? If you're looking 2 years into the future saying, does Abdul Carter create me more wins, or does Travis Hunter create me more wins? And I think that's the conversation they're having. Or Shedeur Sanders. I mean, the entire three-guy list, I think, is what they're looking up and down going, which one down the line when we have our team, again, if it's this year we have to compete and that's the feel in the room, or it's in the next 2 years, which is, I feel like from Jimmy Haslam's comments, more and more the feel. In these 2 years, do I have enough of a gap to say Travis Hunter playing both sides of the ball is going to present me a better chance to win, a better chance to go into the playoffs than drafting Abdul Carter on the other side of Myles Garrett?
And that's the debate they're having right now. I am very hard-pressed to not just fall in love with the idea of having Myles Garrett and Abdul Carter together on that defense, go for 5 years and figure out some things at the other spots. And I think you can do it, and I'll tell you why coming up. Scott Petrak, 11 o'clock, is going to join us from the Chronicle-Telegram, 216-474-0092. You pick one, folks. It's not going to be a quarterback. Let's just say that for now. Jake doesn't have to work tonight because we're running the big NCAA championship game.
I would say it's nice, but I did have to completely throw off my sleeping arrangements to be here this
morning. I was
going to
say, man, once you work that night shift, it's a different world.
Yeah, on a normal day, I woke up about 43 minutes ago. So.
Well, then that's early.
Yeah, pretty much. That's a good day for me.
And get ready. The Florida Gators up against the Duke Blue Devils tonight. So get ready for, oh, wait a minute, 11-1 in the final 114. The Houston Cougars up against the Florida Gators tonight.
That hurts.
We're going to talk about that collapse coming up in just a little bit. Right now, folks, the gut feeling out there, and it's weird because the gut feeling is just what everybody's reporting. And it's weird to me, Jake, to watch the way the reporting goes from, and it is, okay, they were just all in Colorado. Everybody was, the big Colorado Pro Day. Well orchestrated by Dion to put his guys, you know, late and get them all going. So the general feeling now is, well, it's got to be one of these Colorado Buffaloes going number two. And we don't think it's going to be Sanders, basically. So yeah. Is it Hunter or is it then Abdul Carter? And the thought about Hunter that's so intriguing to me is this. He's 6 foot. 188 pounds is what he's listed. Draft profile, 6 foot, 188 pounds. Abdul Carter, beast. What, 6'4", 6'5", 270. Should I have a hard time taking a 6 foot, 188 pound guy in the NFL?
I don't think that's much of a worry to me. Look at Malik Nabers last year. You like Malik Nabers?
I know. He's a stud.
6 foot, 200 pounds.
I know. But this sounds ridiculous. 188 and 200 is even a difference. I mean, that's a slight dude.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he carries this, even the same weight as Malik Nabers, but you could put him in an offseason training program with an NFL team.
Give him a couple of milkshakes.
Yeah.
Have him hang out with you, me, Baskin, Menigan.
Yeah, well, He'll be putting on the wrong kind of weight. He hangs out with us. But like, get him up from 188 to like 190, 195 even.
Put more muscle on him.
Yeah. Is that much of a worry to you? That, like, I had no questions about league neighbors.
I don't know. I'm perplexed by this. The draft profile that I love just looking at these things, because I think they're a really interesting reference when it comes to these. And, you know, NFL.com has been looking at these guys for years, and they keep going over and everything else. And this is what they said about Travis Hunter on his draft profile. And Lance Zierlein is the guy that does most of these, and he's the guy that did this one. And he had sources at the end. And then, Daniel, this is interesting. The AFC executive who was quoted anonymously, you don't play a guy full-time at receiver and then part-time at corner. He's a lot more valuable as a cornerback who plays 8 to 10 snaps a game at receiver. Well, that's not what Andrew Berry has said about the guy. Might not be what Andrew really meant, but that's, you know, he said, we see him as a wide receiver. Is that a concern? I don't know. Now, Jake, this is for you. NFC personnel director. He's the best receiver in this class, and then there's a big drop-off. He's comparable to last year's big three, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison, Roma Dunze, in my opinion. Now, if you can get a guy like that, that's the kind of guy that can change an offense, even at 6 foot, 188 pounds.
See, the thing that scares me about the Browns, and this is why I am more Abdul Carter Hunter than I am Carter than I am Travis. Yeah, we're just all over names. I'm more Abdul Carter than I am Travis Hunter.
Yeah.
Because I think as a 3-14 team trying to figure out what you're doing at quarterback, get more wins on the board next year. The thing about Travis Hunter is you can look at him and say he's a better corner than he is a wide receiver, which is the way that I look at it. You could say he's a better wide receiver than he is a corner. He makes more impact on that side of the ball. Reality is that kid wants to play both. And I don't know. I don't think he can do it full-time.
Can you do that at the NFL level? That's the catch.
I don't think full-time, but I think he wants to play as much on both sides as he possibly can. I think a lot of people would look at even a baseball player like Ohtani, and they're like, can you really dedicate as much time pitching as you do to hitting and be good at both?
Ohtani, very, very few ever have.
But a couple can, right?
Yeah.
And if you think that Travis Hunter is the one of one, the one of few of the guys who can play meaningful amount of snaps at corner and wide receiver and do it well, which he's been doing in college for quite some time. Again, it's a different level. Like, that's sort of the game changer. Now, I don't think the Browns have the time to dedicate to navigating that winding road that's going to be, well, can we really do this? Are we playing him too much? What side of the ball do we prioritize him on? Like, that seems like too much to me if a team's trying to win next year, which is everything that they tell us is that they're trying to win next year. If you're not, then yeah, sure. Like, take that swing. Then it doesn't bother me. You do both. Scary.
Can I give you the hard sell on Travis Hunter?
Yep.
Go for it.
Matt Miller of ESPN hopped on with the morning show this morning, breaks down drafts, been doing it for a very, very long time.
He's good at it.
Yep. We got a little bit of Anthony's question in the beginning of this just to help kind of set it up. Listen to this sell.
A buzz term right now that has become fashionable is generational talent. And that one's interesting to me because if Travis Hunter at wide receiver, let's just say, I know you're actually open to him doing both. How many generational wide receivers are there?
Yeah, that term is overused. It really, really is. Special is a better word. And I'm with you. Like, Ja'Marr Chase is, I think, the highest grade I've ever put on a receiver prospect. We just had Marvin Harrison Jr. last year, who was really close. We're going to have Jeremiah Smith in 2 years, who's going to blow both of them out of the water. So, yeah, I mean, we shouldn't use that term. Same with Ashton Jeanty. I don't think we should use that term. Travis Hunter, if he's primarily a wide receiver, I think he can be a top five wide receiver in the NFL pretty early in his career within his rookie contract. I would say the same if he was playing corner primarily. And I think that's what makes him a generational player, is that we're actually having a conversation about, and I said this on television last week, he might be Odell Beckham Jr. on offense and Denzel Ward on defense. And you just have to decide how you want to split those snaps up. Like, I've never seen someone with his ability to do both at such a high level. And that doesn't mean those guys didn't exist. It's just they didn't have the opportunity, right? So that's what makes him unique and special, is that how well he played both sides at a high level. Like, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Charles Woodson and Champ Bailey in college. You know, we saw other guys try to do a little bit of both. Like, Adoree Jackson, Jabril Peppers, but no one did it like he has. And I think that's where you get the generational label.
That's a stunning comment from Matt Miller. That's really big. Now, how do you divide up those snaps? And does dividing up those snaps, take this the right way, does dividing up those snaps diminish his value one way or the other? Like, do you want a part-time wide receiver and a part-time corner? Or do you want a guy who's a flat-out beast at one or the other?
I think it depends on the... If he's in, as Matt put it, Odell and Denzel on either side of the ball.
That's unbelievable.
Like, it doesn't matter the way you split him up, right? Like, if you have Denzel Ward on the field for 50% of the snaps, you're better for those 50% of the snaps than you're not every single time. Doesn't matter. And if you replace it on the other side with Odell, your team's better. Like, on offense and defense, if you put him in the most critical points on both sides of the ball, then you're winning that game. I just don't know how you get to both sides of that and navigating it right and getting him to play at both of those levels with split time.
All right, let me bring up something else here, and it's this. I've long campaigned for the Browns to add to their receiving talent. Last year, let me give you this number. 9 catches, 99 yards, 2 touchdowns. 11 catches, 75 yards, 1 touchdown. 8 catches, 47 yards. Those were the first 3 games for Cedric Tillman with Jameis Winston starting at quarterback. All of a sudden, Cedric went from a guy who we thought, well, maybe one day Cedric's going to become something for us. And Jameis, with all of his faults, got him the football and turned him into something. And he played well. Elijah Moore, we were looking for Elijah to do some things, weren't we? You know, since he's been here.
Traded him for a second-round pick.
12 catches, 85 yards. Excuse me, targets. He put up numbers with Jameis Winston, a quarterback. 8 catches, 111 yards. A quarterback turned the receivers into better players than the other quarterback did. Does that diminish the value of Travis Hunter at wide receiver? I don't think so. But see, this is where the Browns are going to have a real decision to make. And what do they do with it? That's the question to me, Jake. What do you do? Because it's surefire, flat out, easy. Abdul Carter across from Myles Garrett, done, have a dominant defensive line. That's easy. Travis Hunter comes with some questions. And some, not complications, but just some like, wow, this could be really good. If we make it work.
Yeah, it's the if you make it work. And I think Abdul Carter comes with his own questions too, right? On a much different
level.
Yeah,
I think that's true. I think that's true, yeah.
But I just think Travis Hunter offensively, the quarterback doesn't matter that much to me because you look at the way that Colorado's offense was structured. I'm not going to say it was structured similarly even to Kevin Stefanski's offense, but in the way that you're going to get your playmakers the ball, like a lot of screens because they didn't have a run game, so you ran a lot of short passes, and it was, hey, let's give him the ball in space, which there's no denying the athleticism.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to translate to the next level. If that's what you're worried about, you can sort of put that one away. He'll get him the ball. He'll have an impact on offense. I don't know that quarterback's the biggest issue because I think Jameis, too, probably compared to a normal quarterback, might have inflated some of those numbers, right? Probably takes a lot more risks, probably throwing the ball a lot more with Jameis than you normally are with any other quarterback. So you're probably somewhere in the middle. I don't know that it diminishes it just by Jameis being what he was.
I had the wrong numbers on Tillman. I gave you the targets, the receptions. Yeah, I know. I wanted to catch myself. 8 catches, 81 yards, 7, 99 yards, 6, 75 yards. In other words, he produced.
We'll get it fixed.
Thank you very much, and we just did. Which is the way that we do it. Scott Petrak covers the Browns for the Chronicle-Telegram. His gut feeling... After everything that happened in Colorado, with all of the reporting, all the scuttlebutt that's going on now, what does Scott think? And what about that whole notion about getting both and trading back up? We're going to get into that with Petrak next, right here on The Fan. We're talking Cavs. In the last 12 games, they're 6-6. Now, in the last 8 games, they're 6-2. So they had a losing streak. They came back. They lost 4 straight. They've bounced back. But still, this is not the big push you want going into the playoffs. And we asked, are you concerned? Should you be concerned? The only thing I'd say, Jake, is you were so good all regular season. I don't think it's a good way to end the regular season by just kind of knocking back and forth between wins and losses. That's never a good recipe for priming for the playoffs, but it also doesn't preclude you from once the playoffs start and everybody's back and going right back to where you were. I'm a big believer. Not that you can turn it on and off like that, but they didn't just suddenly get mediocre.
Yeah, no. Is there a team sitting at that potential 8 seed right now, or even 7 seed? Fingers crossed, not going to have to worry about that. But is there a team at the 8 seed that could finish there out of those bottom 4 teams?
That could give you a little fear?
Yeah, that like smacks you in the mouth, maybe punches you in the jaw, that has you to a point where you're actually scared, that if you're almost using that first series as a pseudo ramp-up period, that they could legitimately force you 6-7 games and even give you a run for your money.
Right now, those teams are Orlando, Atlanta, Chicago, Miami. Those are the teams right now in the play-in tournament.
Right.
I could, you're not going to like this. I could give you a scenario where the Cavs could lose to any one of those teams. Do I think it's likely? No, I don't. No, I think the Cavs should knock out whoever they play in the first round of the playoffs and move on. And I wouldn't be overly concerned about it. But I always hate playing Miami.
Yeah.
Chicago's played better recently. Chicago's been better. Atlanta beat the Cavs twice this year, but DeAndre Hunter was wearing another uniform, the Hawk uniform at the time. And Orlando's a good young team. I wouldn't want to mess with Atlanta or with Orlando, if you want to know the truth. But do they scare me if I'm the Cavs? No, they don't scare me.
Yeah, none of those teams I look at and I go, they could really keep up with the Cavs in a 7-game series. Like, even Orlando, who's beat you on national television this year and obviously mm-hmm. last year, everything included, the worst 3-point shooting team in the entire league. And when they beat you on that Sunday a few weeks ago, they shot like 41% from three. They're not going to do that for 7 games, 4 games, 5. That's a 1-game, maybe 2-game stretch where they do that, and that's it.
Everybody else who's in the East, Boston, New York, Indiana, Milwaukee, even Detroit, yeah, they concern me. Yeah. Wayne's in Los Angeles, California. Hello, Wayne.
What's going on, Wayne?
Good day, guys. Hope everything's well.
Thank you, buddy.
I'm trying to keep my chin up about the Cavs, but yes, I'm concerned. I believe Coach has been resting guys for about a month and a half. The other point I would bring up is that these guys are not making their free throws, and thirdly, the defense is just lacking. Now, I know they come to a game and they'll win one, they'll lose one, but I believe with all my heart they cannot go into the playoffs like this. They can easily lose to an 8 seed. We all have to remember, these guys are all pros, and anybody can beat anybody. But if you are the number 1 seed and you lack the killer instinct, and you're just letting these teams hang around who do not deserve to be in the same league with you, well, you look bad.
Wayne, are those not the two things, though, that point to, like, free throws and defense that you point out? Are those not the two things that point to free throws, I would say, potential rust from sitting there resting, just not getting your shots up every single day, and putting maybe your craft within the game that same way. And defense is the place where you can be lackadaisical, where you can take plays off, nights off, where if you're not going to give 100% effort, defense is the way, which is why I look at this Cavs team and think, oh, they're coasting. They're just hoping they get the 1 seed.
Your point is taken, but the Cavs are ranked 13th or 14th in the league in free throw. So right now, this team cannot have. Imagine last night, if they make all their free throws, they win the game by 1 point. So in the playoffs, free throws matter. Every point matters. So I would say this. I hear you, but I think they need to step it up, and I do not believe they need to arrest a single ball player because they're ending the season on, they look lackluster.
And Wayne, that's the concern, Wayne. I will say 6-2 in the last 8 games changes that a little bit, but I get the point because I feel the same thing. Kevin's in Cuyahoga Falls. Kevin.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Wonderfully well, sir.
It's a beautiful day here in Northeast Ohio. We got to take advantage of it while we can. I would say last night we ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw. I mean, you got a guy that went 7-for-11 from the three-point line, and I would say maybe defensively we were a little lackluster in trying to chase him off that line. And, you know, I would say, you know, us also shooting, what, 20% from the three-point line and falling in love with this three-point shot and Evan Mobley. And Jeff, you know, I've called about this many times. It drives me crazy when we outscore them in the paint by like 20 points and you just don't keep pounding it in the paint. I don't understand
Quit making sense, Kevin.
Yeah, right. You got two phenomenal big guys. You outscore the Sacramento by 20 in the point, and yet you still are throwing these 3 points up, and Mobley shoots four of them.
10 of 38 on threes last night, Kev. 10 of 38 on threes.
It was horrible watching it. I mean, I kept screaming at the TV, pass it down low. They weren't listening to me for some reason. I'm not sure why. But
one thing, Kevin, you said about like running into a buzzsaw, the only concern that I have about that is, are you letting these guys become buzzsaws because of the way you're defending them, you know?
You're making a great point, Jeff. I think that's a keen observation. And you get a guy like that, and you got to run him off the three-point line. You just have to. I mean, defensively, you have to. But I do share the concern of a little bit of a lackluster. I mean, this is a final stretch. I really would like to see us, you know, can he tighten it up? Maybe 7 or 8 guys at tops, that's it, you know? Those guys getting the minutes, getting back to what got us to the 60-plus wins, which is focusing on Mobley and Allen. That's what won us all these games. And if we're going to get to the playoffs and through the playoffs, you ride the horses that got you there. And if that's the style of game we play, which I love it and exciting, I love watching Mobley and Allen dunking it all over the place, keep doing that. And last thought is the only team that scares me at those bottoms is Orlando. Man, I tell you, woo, Banchero and Wagner and Sugg, woo, that's three guys that if I were to say give me a little bit of shiver up my spine, that's the one team that does it to me.
And, Kevin, I agree with you on that. And the reason why is just matchup. You know, it goes back, it keeps going back to, all right, who do they have out on the wing? And could these guys really get to the Cavs outside, you know, wing player game? And again, I think it's unfair to think we picked up DeAndre Hunter, he'll take care of it. That's not fair to him. He's a really good player, Jake. But come on, it's more than – we made a trade. We picked up one guy who we like a lot. That's taking care of it. No, it hasn't. It's still a team, and they've got to figure it out.
Yeah, I would say that you look at this team, and again, I think yesterday they were abysmal defensively, especially on the three-point line. Part of that was Domantas Sabonis – being so dominant inside that you felt like you had to,
I love that guy.
He's something else.
Good. He's good.
And they were practically having to throw doubles at him inside the paint because he was doing whatever he wanted against either Mobley or Allen. But then, you weren't giving playoff effort on defense there. You were jogging back to guard the three.
And see, again, that's one of these things. Okay, I would think you can go ahead and give playoff effort once the playoff gets here, but except that's not the really way you want to prime the pump. You know what I mean?
No, it's not. I don't know.
You even know what priming a pump is?
I've never had to prime a pump in my life.
My grandfather had a pump in his basement, and we had to go down and pump water. He didn't have indoor plumbing. He had to prime the pump.
I never had to do that ever.
Yeah. Congratulations for you. Dom is in Cleveland. Hello, Dom.
What's going on, Dom?
How you doing? How you doing today, guys?
Great.
So my problem with this final stretch of the season is play your best players. The reason that we have been so good, and we talked about it earlier in the season, and their big streaks and the 15-0, nobody's playing extensive minutes. When you look at the rankings of the minutes played across the league, I don't even think the Cavs are in the top 25 in terms of their starter minutes per game. And Mitchell and Garland aren't even in the top 65 of minutes played for players. Those are our better minute play. Our most minutes per players. There's Garland.
But Dom,
I'm sorry.
Isn't that how they've been successful this season? Kenny said going into the year he wanted to go deep into the rotation and keep guys fresh. I wonder if it changes come playoff time and if it benefits the team that these guys are fresher. They haven't had a real serious injury this year. I wonder if that's part of it.
Right. That's my point, though. Now you are fresh. You are so fresh compared to the rest of the league Now get ready and start playing closer to the minutes or closer to what you are going to do in the playoffs in these final 10, 12 games. Start playing guys 2-3 extra minutes a game because you are not going 10, 11 deep in the playoffs. You're going 8, maybe 9 deep, probably 7-8 deep in certain games if those games don't start out well. That's my biggest gripe in the last, let's say, month, is just play your players. I understand if a guy is hurt, you can't play him. Give him his time off. Just to get a guy a day off because, hey, we want to give him a day off, that's going to break up what got you here. It's going to break up the rhythm and flow of how you got to these 62 wins in, you know, under 75 games.
Dom, thank you very much. Is that valid, folks? Or should you keep doing it the way you've been doing it all year that's been wildly successful? That, and we have an NCAA championship game tonight coming up. We're going to talk about that right here on Baskin and Phelps with Jake Fulnick. Not on the evening show. He's in for Andy today. We were talking Cavs a little bit. And are you concerned that the way they're... And they're not sputtering toward the finish line. They're not stumbling toward the finish line. But they, over their last 12, they are 500. Over their last 8, they're 6-2. So they've picked it back up a little bit. But it's just not typical of the way they've played all season long. Lewis is in Shaker. Lewis.
Come on, Lewis.
Phelps, you're a country boy. What's up with the primer? Anyway. I mean, that was just a bad match.
Lewis, yeah, no indoor plumbing for Grandpa.
Oh, that's okay. That was just a bad matchup, man. Sabonis has got to be the best center in the NBA, man. He has handles. I mean, jumper, all this. And then LaVine, I think he went like 11 straight shots he hit. I mean, they was just on fire yesterday. I personally let him get on fire,
Lewis.
I mean, how could you not stop him, Phelps?
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, how could you not stop it?
It only takes another team getting on fire 4 times, and you're out of the playoffs.
He could hit the broad side of the bar in the first half, and all of a sudden, you know, he caught fire. I'm not too concerned. You know, I think they'll, you know, put it together, and you know, I'm do what we have to do. Abdul Carter, Phelps, I called yesterday. I hate being the old fogey who calls in. Yesterday, I found out that Abdul Carter runs a 4.3 40, which is blazing fast. Now, I'm like, if you put him alongside Myles Garrett, that's an 85 Bears. One of the guys was like, we're only going to score 33 points and we're not going to have any offense. Excuse me, the 85 Bears, you wouldn't score in 13 points. So, you know, I hate being the old pokey in the room, man. That's just me.
Hang in there, Lewis. It'll be all right, buddy. Appreciate it, Lewis.
Say a 4.3 40?
Yeah, it doesn't sound right. What's the time?
I'm looking right now. It says they apparently, obviously, he didn't test at the combine.
Yeah, I was gonna say, has he even ran one?
Because
he didn't do anything at his pro day either.
No, because he was still dealing with a shoulder injury at that point they were talking about. It does say a 4.3 to 4.38 in an article written via Bleacher Report. That's all I have for you. 4.3 in the range. I don't know how accurate where they got the measurement, but they say 4.3. So, a word on the street per Albert Breer is what they wrote.
Honestly, it would be so easy if there were 2 quarterbacks at the top of this draft and you just thought, okay, there you go.
I would like it a lot more.
Well, it would be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
See, that's the catch here. And that makes this a real challenge. We'll get into that coming up 1 o'clock. Cynthia Freeland's going to join us. Jerry's in Cleveland. Jerry.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Jer. Good to have you with us. Thanks.
I just wanted to hear both of your opinions. Now that we got DeAndre Hunter, would you say the core 4 has changed, or is it a core 5? Would you say that he is, after Evan Mobley and Donovan Mitchell, the next most important player on the team? So if the season ends badly, would you be sure the Cavs would keep him and trade maybe Darius Garland?
I don't think I think Darius still probably sits as the third best guy, Jerry. I don't think that I'd put DeAndre up there. He's probably your most impactful guy. I'd say he definitely slots at least into the 5 spot. He might slot into the 4 spot above Jared Allen, but they play 2 very different roles. And I think the Cavs right now enjoy having the 2 big men alongside of each other. So I don't know that they would be looking to move anybody just to keep Hunter. I think acquiring his contract, they're basically saying, yeah, we'd like to keep him. Ty Jerome's the guy you got to worry about being gone.
And remember, Jerry, DeAndre Hunter is under contract, so he'll be here. I think, Jerry, they took four players and made them five key players for this team. And even if things went really, really south and they get knocked out in the first or second round, I would be really surprised if they decided to bust up that fivesome. I would think these guys are here for next year.
Well, I hope so. I just look at I was one of the guys who always was worried in terms of having two little guys in your starting backcourt.
Join the club, Jerry.
Yeah, so that's why I was asking with DeAndre Hunter.
No, Hunter is here. It took them a long time to find a guy who can play that spot, Jake. And they got a good one. He does a very nice job. I don't see him going anywhere.
No, he's going to be here.
If they decided to bust it up, which I don't think they would do, if they decided to bust it up, I would think you would move one of the little guys in the backcourt and it wouldn't be Donovan. So I think that's down the road, and that's if things go really bad. And I don't expect them to change it up. Tonight, you don't have to work. Congratulations.
Thank you. Day off.
Yeah.
Well, that's
not,
where you're
not day off.
To,
here
right?
you are well, right yeah. now.
It's kind of like day off. I get somebody to talk to instead. So
there you go.
It's a half day off.
Well, I'm hopefully that's good for you. You have the Houston Cougars, who were dead and buried, and they came back against the Duke Blue Devils, which I will tell you, I was sitting on the couch flipping back and forth between the Guardians and the game. And I spent more time watching the Guardians because it just seemed like Duke had it under control, you know? Yeah. And then I think I checked in, it was like a 14-point game with about 8 minutes to go, something like that. And then I flipped back and it was like 4 minutes to go in a 5-point game. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. Something's going on here. So I ended up watching down the stretch and there's Mike Krzyzewski sitting in the stands. And I'll bet it was all Mike could do to not jump out of his seat and run down to the bench and design an inbounds play or do something because, oh, my God, it was an 11-1 run in the final, I believe, 114. 114, an 11-1 run for the Houston Cougars to come back and beat Duke. That's one of the most stunning collapses in a very long time.
And not to mention they made, like, one shot down the final, like, 10 minutes. It was awful. It was a terror. And I'm sitting there, by the way, instead of flipping back and forth, I'm two screen setup person.
So
I'm
sitting there. Yeah, where are you?
I'm sitting there watching the Guardians and the game, but you can bet I was sitting there watching it. Not that anybody cares, but that was my team in the tournament. That's who I had. I was sitting there banking on him and I'm like, oh yeah, this game's wrapped up, having that same thought. And then I'm sitting there pulling my hair out going, no, you don't do this. No, just give the ball to Cooper Flagg. Cooper Flagg, get hot, hit some shots, inbound the ball. Let's take it. Fundamentals. It was not good. But Houston will do that to a degree. Very good defensive team. But I didn't think they were going to do it then.
No, you know, the thing about it, too, and as opposed to the NBA, college basketball, I think coaching can play a really huge part in the game.
Definitely.
Because these are young guys who, you know, haven't played that much basketball, and really being coached up can really be a huge factor for them. It was a 9-0 run in the final 35 seconds. How do you let that happen to your team? It was a really, really rough coaching job down the stretch. And Kelvin Sampson was terrific for Houston.
Yeah, and I mean, talk about even down to the nitty-gritty final things, right? You know Houston's going to foul. What do you do? In the NBA, it's a no-brainer. You get the ball to your best player. You don't even have to tell anybody on the court who's getting the ball. Last night, you see, I can't remember the kid's name for the life of me off the top of my head, but 68% free throw shooter starts dribbling the ball down the floor. Hello. I'm sure his coach wanted to rip his hair out at that point, sitting there going, no. Why? Just give it to your best player. If he's the one who messes up, if he misses the one-on-one,
that's the way it goes.
Yeah, you don't live with the 68% free throw shooter missing the front end of the one-on-one. It's like, yeah, that's kind of what we'd expect down the stretch in a clutch scenario. You'd put it on your star shoulders, not his. But again, that's where coaching, like you said, plays a major role, because that's a moment where you need to call a timeout or make sure you're barking to your team, hey, we know who the ball's going to here. In one way, you got to have option A and option B. And I think that kid was probably like option D.
You know, the one and done in college basketball, you know, like Cooper Flagg's going to leave. He should. You know, he's going to make just boatloads of money. But, boy, wouldn't you think there'd be a part of him that thinks, this is not how this was supposed to go, and I'd love to come back and do this again. But just the realities of the way it goes, you can't walk away from that money. He's going to be the number one pick in the draft.
Not even NIL, nothing is keeping you there for that.
He's not the number one pick in the draft.
No, you're there 100%. Everything goes for you. You could take over an NBA. You could be, oh, I didn't get it in college. Maybe I'll win an NBA Finals next year, depending on who gets me in the lottery.
Not a bad way to go, is it? The Guardians open things up tomorrow at home. How about that? Talk about sputtering. To start a season, I wouldn't say sputter. Let's say not setting the world on fire. We'll tell you how, why, where, and talk a little torpedo bat. Coming up on Baskin and Phelps, Jake Volnick's in for Andy. That's Jake Volnick. He's in for Andy today. Jake's not working his normal show this evening because of the NCAA basketball tournament. I'm Jeff Phelps. Menigan's flying the ship a little bit today. Michael's doing some training, doing a fine job. Meredith is in our new little work area. We got stuff. We got stuff going on today. That's good. That's big. That's the way we're working it.
Today's the day.
Today's the day. Tomorrow's really the day. Why? Guardians coming home, baby. Here we go. Putting that 3-6 record on the field at 221 team batting average, which, by the way, is only 21st in Major League Baseball. It's not, you know, 29th. 3-6 through 9 games has inspired you to think anything in particular, Mr. Volnick?
The lineup's off to a bit of a slow start. Don't know that they'll turn it around, but I'm pretty sure off of 221, they'll even out. They'll come to a happy medium there at some point.
Tied for 19th in runs scored.
Yeah, like it's not bad. It's middle of
Again,
the pack.
Well, yeah, you're down toward the bottom third, third with runs and batting average.
I imagine they'll probably come up to be middle of the pack.
I would think that's accurate.
The problem is, then the rotation, and that's the part that scares me. As I went in looking at the rotation, thinking top two spots, relatively confident that throughout the course of the year they'll look pretty good. I have confidence in Gavin Williams. Luis Ortiz is your wild card, and 4-5, oh boy, buckle in.
Tanner Bibee's issues the other day, notwithstanding, Tanner's just fine. Right now, the Guardians have the fourth worst ERA in Major League Baseball. And it's way too early. Let's just be fair about that.
Yeah.
Way too early to draw any conclusions. It's just that, okay, you expect the team to have pretty good pitching. It hasn't happened so far with an ERA of 5.09. And if this team is going to win, we would assume that the offense is not going to put up 6-7 runs a game. So that means the pitchers are going to have to do the type of job they did last year. So far, 9 games, we haven't really seen that on a regular basis.
And I would even say that a couple of the nights, he got a decent showing out of the offense. Like, there were games, like, you win 8-6, you lose 10-4. I can put up 4 runs. That's pretty much as good as a coin flip as I can give you until you got a shot in this game. Not when you give up 10. It's not going to do it. Again, I just think the rotation's scary at the back end. And the bullpen that was so highly coveted has looked good outside of maybe the guy who you need to look the absolute best, and that's Emmanuel Clase. Not pitching in very high leverage situations most of the time at this point, but early on, he doesn't look to be what he was for 98% of the season. It looks to be, that Yankees series has found its way into 2025.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
You're not enjoying that? You don't like that?
No, the thing about, and this isn't about Emmanuel Clase, this is about bullpen guys, and sometimes even elite closers. Clase was so unbelievable last year. I mean,
almost a Cy Young.
Right. He deservedly so. An ERA under 1. If you remember the year before, he had some issues. He was not the sharpest. He was 3-9 because he blew a bunch of saves, and his ERA was a career high 3.22 2 years ago. Sometimes guys, even elite guys, might have a year where it's not quite there. And then they have a year where it's absolutely lights out. And I mean, he was so good last year. How are you going to repeat that? You're not going to repeat 0.61 ERA. Okay, that's just not going to happen. That's not happening. And we also have to make sure 3.22 ERA out of your closer with 9 losses doesn't happen again. And that, unfortunately, he's more on that path, more on the Yankee series path, than he was the regular season path last year.
Yeah, I'd be happy with a middle ground. I don't need you to have a sub-1 ERA. Again, you're in contention for the Cy Young. I don't expect that year to year. He gave up 5 runs last year. He's given up 3 across 9 games.
Yeah, what's that tell you?
I don't know, honestly. He's a guy that clearly, I thought, trusted his stuff last year, but now I don't think his teams have figured him out. He's a guy who throws a 102-mile-an-hour cutter. You don't just figure that. Like, there's no figuring that out. Not to a perfect degree, not when it has that much movement. Like, you throw that pitch, there's clearly something off mentally that maybe you're just not as confident. You're laying things out there. You're letting people get the ball to the bat. I don't know. But he has put himself in now a territory where if I see Emmanuel Clase now stepping to the bump, where last year I could have walked away, went to bed if it was a night game. Now I'm on the edge of my seat and I'm up by 2.
Yeah, the problem for this team is, and it's not a problem as long as they do their job, this team is predicated on the back end of the bullpen being nails, and that has to be the case. We're going to have Chris Antonetti, by the way, president of baseball operations, on with us at 10:40 tomorrow. So, and Tom Withers is going to be joining us tomorrow on the show. So that'll be fun. It'll be Dano, me, Tom Withers. Because you're going to be working your show.
Right. Talk about an upgrade. You get Tom over me.
No, I didn't say that.
You didn't have to. I did.
Well, Tom is going to be working with the station a little bit from time to time. Tom from the Associated Press. So he's going to be in with me tomorrow for Andy. So I'm looking forward to that. And Chris Antonetti will join us at 10:40. So anxious to talk to Chris. But the back end of this bullpen was so good last year. And, you know, all Stephen Vogt had to do was get his starters through 5 or 6 innings and turn it over to the bullpen. Chances are you're going to get a win if you had the lead. That's tough because that means these guys have to come through and do it again. And remember, they sorted through some guys last year. Nick Sandlin was really good for a long time. Scott Barlow was pretty good. Scott got dispatched last year. Sandlin dispatched to Toronto this year. And they've put some new guys in there. Are you sure that Paul Sewald is going to be as good as he's been in the past? We don't know that. Is Clase going to have an ERA under 1? No, he's not. I mean, that's silly.
That's a given now. I mean, again, well, he's got 2 runs for about the rest of the year if he wants to do it. So good luck.
Which is unbelievable. And so it's just a situation that Stephen Vogt's going to have to figure out and make it work. There are a couple of guys on the offensive side. I want your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
This came up last week. I couldn't agree more. Kyle Manzardo needs to play all the time. An occasional day off, maybe, right? Just because you want a guy to be fresh. But let's see what you have here. You know, he's been good. He had a better start, cooled off a little bit lately. But he's 24 years old. He's been swinging a pretty decent bat. I want to see more of Manzardo. I don't want to see him out of the lineup.
Well, yeah, because what did they tell you this offseason? By moving off of Jimenez, by moving off of Naylor, we have young guys that we're going to entrust in, that we're going to bank on. Okay, then you need to 100% buy into that fact. And you got Carlos Santana, a gold glove level first baseman. That's fine if he sits there and rotates DH with Kyle Manzardo. It's the problem of the days that you sat down Manzardo, I think against the Padres against a lefty, and you brought Jonathan Rodriguez out.
And they did that when Manzardo was 4 of 5 on lefties.
Yeah, with 2 homers.
Yes.
Like, you just throw him out there. If he goes 0-4, he goes 0-4.
I couldn't understand that move either. It's like, he's really hot. He's been hitting lefties. Let's not start him. But what the? Maybe it was something specific for that game. You know, we don't like the matchup against this particular lefty. But that's what I'm thinking. It's like, why do you not start him there? You start him all the time. Find out if you have starting caliber talent on this team that deserve to be in the lineup all the time. Mike Hargrove always said, and I brought this up last week when Dan and I were doing the show, Mike's line was always, your starters are starters for a reason. And the longer you go and you think about that, it's true. Well, why is he your starter? Well, because he's good and he needs to be in the lineup every day. I don't need to play the guy who's not as good as he is. Let's find out who your real starters are on this team and play him for 150 games. And that's what I want to see. Is Manzardo one of those guys? And right now he's proving to me, yes, he is. If he falters, that's a different story. But just play him. I mean, Jeff, go.
Even if he hits 260 with some pop and he brings 20 to 25 homers hitting 260, are you not happy?
Yeah.
I'm elated.
And now he is playing. Okay, he's played in every game. He's got a lot of at-bats. Only Santana and Kwan have more. But I just don't want to see him out of the lineup. I'm disappointed for Lane Thomas because he's off to a slow start. I think Lane is such a nice upgrade for this team in center field. I really like that move. I'm glad they went out and got him. I'm glad he's here this year. And after watching Tyler Freeman play a really good center field for a guy who'd never played center field before, but hit, I think it was like 205. Okay. You got to do better than that. We had Miles Straw. Upgrading to Tyler Freeman's bat from Miles Straw is not really much of an upgrade. Lane Thomas should be an upgrade. That should happen. What have you thought of Gabe Arias so far at second base?
I actually thought he's looked pretty good.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, defensively he's been... I guess I haven't recognized him. I haven't noticed him on defense, which is a good thing for my second baseman.
Except the one game he had where he made a couple of... He had one game where he bobbled that throw. He's going to the plate, and it didn't work out too well. But so far, I agree with you. Nothing has stood out in a negative way. His batting average is okay. He's at 250. He's only driven in two runs. But right now, he's not killing you.
No, I think if you look down the road, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months, he's still hitting 250, starting to drive in a couple more runs, you go, that's probably good enough. I'm probably not going to move a ton of guys around to get him out of the lineup. Especially, too, they talked so much about the pop that he developed and they felt he had in the minor leagues that hadn't gotten a chance to show itself once he's been in the majors. You've seen him drive out, at least one ball this year? I think that's it. Yeah, he has one homer. Again, even if you're trending upwards, 15, driving 15 to 20 balls out of the yard, that's what the team's missing. Look up and down the lineup. They missed the pop, right? You got rid of Josh Naylor. Well, you're missing the pop. Who's going to step in? It's probably not going to be just one guy unless Kyle Manzardo goes wild.
Again, it's early.
Yeah, of course.
But let me throw these things at you. When early concerns become early reality, I think that's where you sometimes have an issue. Lane Thomas, I expect to hit, but he's hitting 172. Brian Rocchio was great in the playoffs last year. He's hitting 192. He didn't pick up where he left off. Bo Naylor, who we're all hoping Bo figures it out, is off to a 174 start. Nolan Jones, who I'm giddy, is back in town. Give him some at-bats. Let him figure it out. He's hitting 136 right now. John Kenzie Noel, who we love, 063 batting average. Schneeman, under 100. Jonathan Rodriguez hasn't had a hit this year, and Austin Hedges is at 200. You got a lot of guys who aren't hitting the ball real well right now.
I think you nailed it on the head. It's the whole point of you look at this team, and it's when your early concerns turn to reality.
Yep.
It's when I looked at all of the things that could go wrong, and it's not other things that are failing. It's like, oh, you've had some bad breaks. It's almost every point that I looked at in this team and go, that's not a sure thing. Everybody in the lineup outside of Kwan, Jose, Carlos Santana, and they're all sitting at the bottom of the order in terms of what they've done so far this early season.
So even though it's early, folks, that's the point. The concerns that we had even going into this are already on display, and that might be a problem. 216-474-0092. It's Baskin and Phelps with Volnick right here on The Fan. I'm Jeff Phelps. Jake's in for Andy today. NCAA basketball on our air tonight. We'll have the championship game, Florida against Houston. So you can listen in. Jake won't be doing his show tonight, but you'll be back at it on Tuesday, right?
I will indeed.
Hey, before we get into the torpedo bat, I want to send out a congratulations. Several years ago, we had a young guy on our show, Maxwell Moldovan, who was a golfer from Green and was at Ohio State. And Maxwell had... Dan, he'd qualified for the U.S. Open, right? Was on his way to the U.S. Open, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And congratulations to Maxwell. He won his first professional tournament over the weekend, and he did it in Brazil. And how's this for cool? Is this a great way to win a tournament? He's on 18, okay? He has to get down in two to force a tie. And he's got a 50-foot putt, and he made it for eagle.
Jeez.
To win. 50-footer for eagle to win.
Yeah, it's absurd.
He's playing on the PGA Tour Americas at the Brazil Open. So congratulations to Maxwell Moldovan. We're happy for him, and we knew him when. Before he ever won, we knew him. So that's really good. I'm really happy for him.
I'm sure he sent out his congratulations to you just as you did to him.
I'm sure he did, yeah, yeah. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred talked about the torpedo bat craze that's suddenly all over the place in Major League Baseball. And, of course, we know the deal. The Yankees hit some home runs and had a phenomenal series. And they're at the top of everything right now in Major League Baseball stats, batting average, run scored. They're right up there. But Manfred came out and made some comments about it that I actually agree with. And one thing he said, it was in a Q&A session with the New York Times, The Athletic, and he talked about the future of the torpedo bat and explained that they are good for baseball. And his quote is, "I believe that issues like the torpedo bat and the debate around it demonstrate the fact that baseball still occupies a unique place in our culture. Because people get into a complete frenzy over something that's really nothing at the end of the day." He said the bats comply with the rules. Players have actually been moving the sweet spots around in bats for years, which is true. You know, they're looking for an edge. But it demonstrates that something about the game is more important than is captured by television ratings or revenue or any of those things when you have the discussions and the debates about it. And I think he's right. I don't often agree with Rob Manfred, but I think the torpedo bats are good for the game. And Jake, one key reason why: it's a piece of wood. You're not allowed to stuff it with super balls anymore. You're not allowed to put cork in it. So what can you do with it? You can use different types of wood, which has been a common thing that players have tried to do. But this is just kind of changing the shape, the structure a little bit, and trying to manipulate a piece of wood. Nothing wrong with that. They fit within the rules.
Maybe it's just stuck up baseball person in me. Maybe it is that I just look at it and I'm like, I don't like that. And maybe it's just because it was the Yankees. Maybe that plays into a fact of it. That's where it's really highlighted. I hate it. The idea that you're just essentially, again, like you've tried to move the sweet spot. This is obviously the most dramatic that we've seen in terms of reshaping the actual bat. But I just look at, like, Anthony Volpe is my main main indicator of why I don't like it, because I look at it and I look at every single home run he's hit this year. By the way, four, I think, after hitting like 12 last year while playing in Yankee Stadium. He's already up to four. I think it was a Joe Buck call from the ESPN broadcast. He literally goes, Volpe pops it up to right, and that ball landed over the wall. In combination, a short porch and right for Yankee Stadium and a ball that really wouldn't have had a chance because it was inside on the hands of Volpe, where he hits just about everything, and then it goes. You almost take out, not part of the skill of it, but part of the adjustment for hitters. It's like, adjust to hit it at the sweet part of the bat the way that everybody's been doing their entire childhood, growing up, going into the majors, and instead it's just kind of you'll probably hit better with this.
There's another guy who's, you know, I mean, this, it couldn't work out better for this guy. His name's Keenan Long, and he's with a company called Long Ball Labs. And he's weighed in on this, and he's done a bunch of interviews, and he was on MLB Now and all kinds of things. And he said he wanted to point out something that people have butchered through this whole thing. And the typical baseball bat is, you know, just think of it, you know, the bat stays at least as wide, you know, at the end of the bat, then, because they're, you know, the torpedo bat tapers it at the end, but the normal bat structure, it's not really tapered, it's just rounded off at the end. He says it's a complete fallacy that the end of the bat is not important. And I think that's interesting because he said he keeps hearing this fallacy that the mass end of the barrel is not productive in the collision with the ball. I thought this is a lab guy talking. He said that's a fallacy. He said that's not true at all. He said it's a universal claim that it's good to take away mass from the barrel end of the bat. And he says no. But the torpedo bat's a little different. He said, I want to be clear, it's not true in the physics of hitting a baseball with a bat. He said the physics of the bat-ball collision in that 1 millisecond when the bat and the ball are touched is governed by the conservation of linear momentum. And the mass end of the barrel contributes to that equation even more so than the mass. So there you go. So it's working for some guys, but this dude, who, you know, physicist, knows all this stuff, bat, all that stuff, he says, no, that stuff's important too. Which might be why Aaron Judge is still smashing the ball and not using a torpedo bat.
Right. It's not
it's
like,
still the guy swinging the bat.
Yeah, you still have to hit the ball. It's not, and it's not great for everybody. I think that was the main point that the Yankees made. It was like, just don't put this in the hands of every single hitter, and it's...
And they're immediately better.
Yeah, these aren't steroids
because,
that we're putting
by God,
in your hands.
If that's the case, we're getting them for half the guys in the Guardians lineup.
Yeah, it's just the way that certain guys hit, you adjust it, and if they're constantly in on the hands slightly, it's not like you're getting sawed off every single time, and now you're hitting home runs when you're getting hit 3 inches above your hand. But if you struggle with your swing to get it hit, what is the traditional sweet part of the bat, and you keep handcuffing yourself with the ball a little bit and jamming yourself, well, this is sort of a quick fix to actually fixing the problem. That's where it bothers me, is instead of the adjustment to be made, it's a quick fix. It's, well, don't change your swing at all. It's a good swing. We'll just change the bat.
The one thing about this that I think is fascinating is that it's just a piece of wood. It's clearly, you know, guys have their specifics and everything else, and it's a big deal. But I do love the fact that Major League Baseball, and you know, think about how hard Major League Baseball players could hit if they use some of the, you know, different types of bat materials that are used at the college and high school level. It would be scary. And I'm glad that Major League Baseball hasn't gone to that. I'm glad they haven't put together composite types of bats and other things like that. They've stuck with wood, and I think that's the best way to go. The ball would jump off aluminum, whatever yeah. substance you want, it would be just terrible. I think in Major League Baseball, and it would, I think it would really spoil the game. So I'm glad they've done that. But tinkering with a piece of wood and everything—that's fine. It's all in the rules, especially in an age where, you know, if a hitter faces the same pitcher three times in a game, good luck. That rarely happens anymore.
Yeah, I think part of this too. Is I sit here and think about it, and of course Rob Manfred's going to tell you this is good for the game, right? Something very simple that in the rules they have written right now is not a problem, right? It's not juiced baseballs where you're like, you're clearly feeding for offensive production as a means to draw it back into the casual viewer. But the casual viewer, what do they want to see? See guys hit the ball. They want to see guys hit the ball over the
Absolutely.
Wall.
Absolutely.
They want to see home runs.
They want to see offensive action. Unless you're a freaky dude like me and loves watching great pitching.
Well, I do too. It's part of being the sort of baseball nerd side of it, right? But it draws in the casual viewer. If there's guys who traditionally aren't necessarily great hitters, right? And there's only a small change they need to make, and it is a torpedo bat. Yeah. Again, I can point to Anthony Volpe from last year. Not really great offensive production. This year looks really good so far. If you can change that for the average viewer, it's great. Keep the torpedo bats. And what's Rob Manfred looking to do? Put eyes on the game. That's his most important job to some degree, is put eyes on the game. And if the torpedo bats don't break a rule in order to do it, I'm sure he'd love it.
It's just kind of funny that this is something that's occupied everybody early on in the season. Who would have thought it? You know? It's just a little change in bat, especially when they've been used in the past. This isn't just new this year. Giancarlo Stanton used them last year, as we saw against the Guardians in the playoffs. It just wasn't as, publicized, notarized, whatever. Because who literally pays attention to the bat that a guy's swinging. You just see a guy swinging a bat.
You think if the Milwaukee Brewers had five guys using this thing, anybody would have noticed?
Maybe because the game would have been more competitive. But one thing I keep going back to on this, a wise man by the name of Menegan, when this whole thing was going on, Dan just kept saying, have you seen the Brewers pitching staff? So think all you want about the torpedo bat. Does it help? I don't know. Did it help these guys? I don't know. Was the fact that the Brewers pitching staff was just horrendous in that series, is that more important? Dano, is that more important?
They figured it out a little, but they've also, I think, gave up eight yesterday as well to a really crummy team. So I got a feeling Brewers pitching has got something to do with this.
That might be part of it. When it comes to getting smart people on the show, by golly, we're all in. And a really smart person is coming up next. Cynthia Freeland from the NFL Network will be joining us here. Her thoughts on, do you overdraft a quarterback because he plays quarterback and you need one? She's next on Baskin and Phelps with Jake Volnick in for Andy. Welcome back to Baskin and Phelps. Jeff Phelps here. Jake Volnick in for Andy today. We have had Cynthia Freeland on the show before. We love when Cynthia joins us. When you're looking for smart, sharp analysis on the NFL, Cynthia is our go-to, and she's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline from the NFL Network. Hi, Cynthia.
How you doing?
We are well, but oh, we're so perplexed here in Cleveland, we don't know what to do.
Well, I think you got some good options. Number two is a good place to be. There's a lot of interesting ways that you could go. I think it's all upside.
Oh, I love the way you're thinking. Riddle me this one. You need a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy out there who's not named Cam Ward, who probably is going to be on the board at number two, named Shadur, who a lot of people think would have been the fifth, sixth, whatever, pick in last year's draft at quarterback, blah, 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 blah. Is a guy who might not be that highly thought of in comparison to other quarterbacks who have come out in the past worth taking at number two because you need a quarterback?
You know, the answer, I guess, to me would be, I'm looking at the opportunity here to be like, all right, what about Travis Hunter there? Because I think he is a really special talent as well, a guy who, I mean, that guy, talk about culture changer. And I like Shador, don't get me wrong. But just Travis Hunter is so unique. I haven't seen anyone like him in a really long time. And, like, I think he eats, breathes, sleeps, all of it, football, too. So it's he's kind of a cool, interesting X factor that you have to – You can't at least discount, right? You can't be like, wow, maybe we should, you know, we need a quarterback, but we can't look at this guy. I think you have to at least consider him.
You can consider Travis Hunter. The Browns go out to the Colorado Pro Day. They send eight people there. Is that a sign to you that they are in love with one of those guys? They're probably going to draft one? Or is that just a typical behavior for you? Because the Browns, as far as we know, have not sent eight people to do just about anything throughout the draft.
I mean, but, you know, have we ever seen a pro day called a showcase before? But,
no.
You know, I think
high school
part
level,
of it
yes.
is to get it right. You know, I don't necessarily, like, there are two guys there who are worthy of the second pick overall. You know, I will agree that for Shador, some of that has to do with scarcity at the position and the fact that, you know, there just aren't always tons of quarterbacks everywhere. If there were, it would be a much easier game to win and, you know, no one would be looking every year. So I take the eight people personnel-wise as more of a sign of, you know, we need some to get our full assessment of Travis Hunter. We need some to get our full assessment of Shador Sanders. And there are a couple other, you know, like a receiver here too, you know, later round guys. But I just take it more as, you know, those two guys are just so different and so interesting that you probably can't have, you know, you want to have diversity of people in the room who make decisions to bring different viewpoints.
I think Travis Hunter is a really fascinating prospect. You have needs here in Cleveland, Cynthia. The idea of, and tell me what appeals to you more, and also what do you think helps you win football games more? Putting another big-time defensive end across from Myles Garrett, bringing in a guy like Hunter who we've not seen before could he actually play both sides and play him at the level that people think he can? Or a quarterback who might not be top five, but if he's top 10,
right,
how do you pass on him? Which one helps you win football games more if you're the Cleveland Browns?
I'm going to go with, and I know this is not a very analytics-based answer, but in this point, it's where is the sum of all of the parts that you could get in the whole draft going to be more than the individual units, the individual players that make that up. So I'm going to give this front office and Andrew Berry and, of course, Kevin Stefanski the latitude to say whatever they pick, I'm going to give them some trust there. Because ultimately, if they believe they can get more from piecing together what they've seen from Kenny Pickett, I don't know what's happened in the building, what they believe at this point, but if they think they can get more, I'm counting Travis Hunter as mainly a wide receiver with some, you know, with some corner upside. Dion, my former coworker, told all of us.
Drop there. I like that.
Yeah, well, I just want to, establish credibility that it's
absolutely
not like from what he's saying on TV. Like, he told a bunch of us who he used to work with that realistically the kid could play 80 snaps a game. So that's both sides. So if you think 60 is like a round number for number of snaps on each side. So when you're looking at that, you're like, okay, he's going to play most, and Deion said he's going to play most, I see him as playing mostly wide receiver with some packages on the defense. That's what he said. So I'm gonna take Deion at his word,
okay,
and that's where I would project him, and that's how I've been forecasting him. So when I'm looking at that, is the sum of that better than? I'm a little more out on Abdul Carter than other people, so I think you can get a lot of great help for the whole defensive front and what a unique kind of mind you have a defensive coordinator can do with a guy who has absolutely just elite traits in Myles Garrett. I think you can, this is a much deeper defensive line class. So I think, Jim Schwartz is going to be happy with whatever he's able to get in later rounds. So I'm saying the marginal return, you are really, to me, the calculus is the quarterback position scarce enough where we can't find someone that we could make do with for a year or whatever to figure out in order to take Travis Hunter, or is Travis Hunter too elite? Can we get him? Do we need a quarterback? It's scarcity at the position that would really drive to me the ultimate like refinements between what you take where.
Cynthia, just because I'm interested, why the reserve on Abdul Carter?
I'm not going to be very popular for saying this, but when I look at his film, even when he's fully healthy, and I do believe he could have more of an injury risk than maybe we initially thought, at least way back in the combine days. Doesn't that feel like it was like years ago?
Yes.
It was like 2 minutes ago. But I'm worried about injuries. And also, I think people have overestimated. I think that they've like, he's wearing 11. He went to Penn State. He's not Micah Parsons. He's done it for 1 year at a high level, but his resume doesn't include things that you would want. He has great burst. The stuff you can't teach, he has. The great burst, and, Myles Garrett's burst is elite, the fastest we've seen since he entered the league. We get it. We need a good burst. But he doesn't have non-bull rush moves that are, what happens on a second effort? What happens when you have to, when an offensive, when they double team you? He does those things, they're so unknown that it introduces volatility into the projection. And when you have a deep class, so meaning the substitutes at, he could be elite. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he couldn't. I just feel like he's not as well polished and formed. The projection includes more volatility than other players.
Cynthia Freeland joining us from the NFL Network. Is there another quarterback outside of Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders who you think, this guy might even have more upside and would be a better pick for the Browns if he's there at 33 or they could trade back up into the first round?
I might not be popular for this one either, but I think you could get, look, like if you're, I'm not suggesting, franchise, like the next coming of Patrick Mahomes, but like not saying that. But I do think, like, if somehow, you know, people have, there are so wildly varying opinions of Jackson Dart that it's like, it could be all over the place. If he were somehow available at 33, that would be a nice way to, like, if you could get Travis Hunter and Jackson Dart, life would be great. I also, I know he's old, but Tyler Shuck out of Louisville, he's got something that feels like, I'm not, again, if you're, let's talk about for 2-3 years, a guy who could really, you know, be a very good addition to a system that didn't require him to do, you know, off platform, crazy arm angle stuff. He's got a good arm. You know, I know he had, other than at Louisville last year, he had a couple of injury issues. And I think it's funny that was like, he's 600 years old. Like, it is true. It's weird. It
That's
is
7
weird
years
that
of college
with,
gets to you, doesn't it, Cynthia?
I know. It's crazy.
It is.
You know, I think that one could be a nice opportunity to reset, to kind of reset some of the other positions and wait to be able to pick a quarterback later or achieve one through free agency. I wish that there were 32 franchise quarterbacks that could last for multiple. It'd be really fun, but this is the puzzle. This is how you have to solve it. You can only, you know, pick from the supply we have. You know, the demand is endless, but the supply is what it is.
How do you weigh taking a potential one of those quarterbacks if they were to fall to 33 between Shug and Dart, and then the potential of maybe giving up some of your extra draft assets to move back into the first round if you were considering, hey, I took Travis Hunter with number 2, and now I'm sitting at 16, and Shador Sanders is still on the board.
Yeah, moving back up is smart for the quarterback position, just because the percentage of the cap that position commands is getting nothing but higher, and it's making things really hard. So you get an extra year, obviously, if you are drafting a guy in the first round. So stick with one of those. If you're going to trade back in, it'd be for a quarterback. It'd be for a wide receiver. It'd be for a guy who really has like one of those top 5 most expensive positions. So I can see doing it, especially, I mean, if somehow Shador Sanders falls that low, then it would be, it just feels like one of those things where you're like, this is a really, really smart, you know, swing, right? Like you saw it with the Houston Texans getting C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. in the same draft. Like, that was bananas, but that was a really smart swing because now the Texans are able to not have to pay a pass rusher and a quarterback for 5 years instead of 4. So, and they can, that's really great for their cap. So, you know, I think it's very smart to do, and I think it's something that should be considered. But you, between Shuck or, you know, Jackson Dart, like, you've got to bring them into your building, see if they understand the strategy, see if they can execute the things you need them to. Surplus value with quarterbacks is nice, meaning, like, if you have this, Shuck has a massive arm, maybe the biggest arm in the whole class in terms of velocity and how fast and hard he can throw. But if you can't give him enough time to be able to, you know, let those plays develop based on how he reads the entire defense, like, it's surplus value that you're never going to be able to, you know, you're never going to be able to capitalize on. So I'm looking at it and saying, what is it that you need him to do? There are very few coaches I think are more able to find a quarterback's strengths and play to them than Kevin Stefanski. I love what he's able to do for quarterbacks. So whoever of those two in the building, bring them in, see if you can get them at a lower rate than the second overall pick. And I think that Browns fans would be really happy. And I think the rest of the North would be like, oh, we got some troubles.
Cynthia Freeland joining us from the NFL Network. Through this whole process, Cynthia, I keep sitting back and I keep thinking, is the whole plan here just to acquire Kirk Cousins and let him play for 3 years? Is Atlanta going to move on from Kirk Cousins? And if so, where does he end up?
You know, the funny part is if you kind of track like how Terry Fontenot works and Raheem Morris and all those things, I think they would be willing to part with him. I think they have to feel comfort level with what their options are for the entire quarterback room. I know Michael Penix Jr., they drafted him really high, but do they, I would have to find a little bit more out about how they feel he's learned. And, you know, he had a nice end of the season, but, you know, that's stepping into a role and it's a little different than being the starter from day one. So ultimately, do they have enough there with Penix and a backup to feel comfortable? That's the math. But I wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, I love Kirk Cousins. I grew up near Michigan State, so I've known him for a long time. And He's a guy who I believe if he does come, I don't think, you know, obviously last year we had some mobility questions post Achilles injury. I don't think he would come there unless he truly was healthy enough to be able to do it too. So just so you guys, I don't know, that's my feeling about his personality. He wouldn't want to set himself up to let anyone down.
Would he be a good answer here?
If I'm honest, I think yes, because then you get your Travis Hunter, yeah, and then you could, like, you could start to really have something special, because the hard part about, as all of us know, watching the NFL for so long, you know, even the guys with that are the best prospects, like Caleb Williams didn't fix the Bears last year.
No.
You know, he got sacked all the time. You know, the Titans, they're in an interesting spot because I don't know if they've solved their offensive line even a little bit, even with Callahan there. Like, Daddy Callahan, not even Brian, his dad, like, that guy's a legend, and he couldn't figure out the pressure issue yet. So, in my opinion, I think a Kirk Cousins would be a very, very exciting, like, the sum of the parts would be bigger than each individual part if there was a healthy Kirk Cousins there.
Let me bounce this last thought off of you on this one. And Cynthia Freeland joining us from the NFL Network and the Numbers Game on YouTube. You can watch Cynthia's show. The idea of, and this one's appealed to me a lot, and because I'm not sure where to rank Sanders. I'm not going to analyze quarterbacks and know, is this guy going to make the jump? Is he not? I like Jackson Dart as you do. The idea of Kirk Cousins, Kenny Pickett, and Jackson Dart, Tyler Shuck, Jalen Milrow, that trio, to me, feels like you could go win some football games, or at least have your quarterback situation under control. Cynthia, does it feel that way to you?
I would love that for the Browns, because number one, I think every year, unless you have like your Patrick Mahomes and you can kind of figure things out a little bit differently, I think you should be taking a mid-round, like third, second-round guy. Now, maybe you take him a little higher just because of the way that this draft class is situated, but I think you should be taking, you know, until you have it figured out a little bit better, take more swings, because it's not, you know, if you look at historically, you know, Brock Purdy, right? Like, I hate coming back to that one, but like, he fit the system really well. Bo Nix, I know we look back now and we're like, well, they made the playoffs. Nobody thought they would even be the best team in there. You know, that they would even be the second best or third best team in their division. They thought the Broncos would be fourth. Bo Nix, who made sense to Sean Payton, Sean Payton saw in him something that reminded him of Drew Brees, and that worked out really well for them. So you should be taking swings, and you should be not letting, you know, the revisionist past, or like looking back and be like, well, this one was a bad one. You got to kind of look forward, sunk costs, right? You have to move forward and find the right one. I think you should be drafting rookie quarterbacks pretty much every year, not first round, but, you know, you should be acquiring more until you get the right thing. Because what's the worst that could happen? You make a guy into a tradable asset. Oh no, that sounds terrible to have more draft picks. You know, like, it's great stuff.
If you're looking right now and you're the Browns, and there's been so much buzz around Carter, there's been so much buzz around Hunter, is trading down still on the table like we thought it was going back weeks and weeks, or is that sort of faded away? And if so, maybe what would it take?
You know, the hard part is, it's really, do you believe the Giants want, do other teams, maybe not the Browns, but do other teams, to find a trade partner that's really going to be worth foregoing the opportunity to get a Travis Hunter or even Abdul Carter? Like, is someone going to believe that the Giants, who have the most craziest quarterback room right now, that I, like, what is that? We need a reality TV show on that one. And that's insane, right? Like, how does Tommy DeVito interact with Russell Wilson? Somebody please just like show me that. But long story short is, do you believe that they're in the market for presumably Shedeur Sanders? That's what it's going to take. Because if the Browns can get the better of someone believing that they need to come up to get Sanders, absolutely. If they can get more than that, you know, you can go online and look at like the Jimmy J chart. It's roughly right. Like, it's not perfect, but it's roughly right. But if the Browns can get more than what the point value for that is, then potentially that's smart. But you have to believe that the Giants want Shedeur, and a team would have to believe that the Giants want Shedeur so much that they need to come up ahead of them.
Cynthia, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, and we will be watching you on the NFL Network and the Numbers Game on YouTube. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. And I miss the Midwest in the spring. It's the best time of year there.
Yeah,
I'll have to come home soon.
We're loving the flooding.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. But you know what happens after the flooding? Amazing green, all the flowers. It smells so good. You don't get that in California. You don't get that first spring smell.
Well, that's true. That's true. Enjoy the draft. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network, and Numbers Game on YouTube. That was Cynthia Freeland from the NFL Network, who joined us moments ago here on Baskin and Phelps. I'm Jeff Phelps, Jake Volnick in for Andy Baskin today. And that was Cynthia's response to asking about Shedeur Sanders. And she immediately went Travis Hunter on us. Jake, that feels like where this thing is going. I know, and again, everybody's on the outside looking in. The only people who really know are the guys sitting over there in Berea at 76 Lou Groza Boulevard, Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski, Paul DePodesta, wherever he might be sitting.
Yeah, he's not sitting there.
And he might stop in from time to time. And they're going to figure it out. I personally liked the one thing that Cynthia said to the question that I threw out at her, that was this: what if the Browns ended up with Kirk Cousins, Kenny Pickett, and fill in whichever rookie you draft in the second or third round? And she said she loved that option for the Browns. If Cousins is healthy, and I personally think, I thought he played pretty well last year until he got hurt in season, and it wasn't his Achilles. That sounds like just a real sensible way to go if you have any questions about taking Shedeur Sanders at number two.
Yeah, and I'm more in the boat that you are, where I think Kirk is probably closer to what he was for the first nine games than he was the last five or six, right? Where, one touchdown, nine interceptions doesn't really feel like Kirk Cousins to me.
No.
Or 17-7 feels just about right.
Remember, he had that huge game in the middle of the season.
500 yards.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
It was great. Can you realistically really go get Kirk and spend the money, then draft a quarterback in the second round, and then next year be looking at your room going, ooh, we have nobody again?
But you know what? If Cousins were to come here, I would think he's like a three-year answer. And that allows you to do a lot of things at the quarterback position. It's not like he's Aaron Rodgers 40, right? He's 30, what, seven?
Yeah.
And if you could play him for two, maybe 3 years, 37, 38, 39. I mean, his game's not predicated on running all over the field. His game is predicated on putting the ball where it's supposed to be. I think that gives you the opportunity to develop somebody without having to perhaps reach for somebody. See, that's my fear with Sanders. I want him to be the right guy, and I want the Browns to take him because that solves everything.
Right.
Then you have your guy for the next 5 years, and you made the right choice, and he's a good player. But if they're not convinced of that, you can't use the second pick in the draft on a guy who might be the 15th, 16th, 17th best quarterback in the league, because you'll be looking like you were when you had Baker Mayfield. Baker is certainly a competent NFL quarterback, but you thought you needed an upgrade if you're the Browns to win, and that's why they made that move. I don't want to be in that situation again where, hey, okay, he did a nice job, but by God, we're 9-8. That's not going to get her done. And so I so want them to draft him because they think he's going to be a star, and he is. And that's more wishful thinking maybe than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like she liked the idea of maybe not taking him at two, but then trading back in. Like I said, if he fell to 16, I feel like people are a lot more comfortable with that, obviously, as you would be.
As long as you don't have to give up next year's number one.
Right.
Which you might.
Well, it depends what else you throw in the
pit. Exactly. Yeah, but you might.
Yeah, it's in the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
I just think if you look at what you have right now, though, and you're going Shedeur or Kirk Cousins. Like I said, I like Kirk. I think Kirk puts you in a position to be semi-competitive.
Real competent NFL quarterback play.
The problem is the Browns are looking at a Super Bowl competition window, however you want to look at it, that slams shut on them, right? With Deshaun Watson not working out.
You've got to open it up again.
Right. Yeah. Their idea is that they're going to open it up quickly. Kirk Cousins for 2 to 3 years opens a competition window quickly. I don't think it opens a Super Bowl window at all. And I think they want to be there within the next 2 to 3 years. I think that's their idea. Shador, the possibility he could be that, I think is what they would like more.
Kirk Cousins' playoff record is not stellar.
No.
Jim is in Strongsville. Hi, Jim.
What's going on, Jim?
Hey, guys. Listen, I hate to keep rattling this cage, but all this Travis Hunter talk. Listen, the Browns have said that they view him as a wide receiver. I am not one of these that believes, well, there'll be some defensive. There's no defensive packages you put out there for special corners. That would, one, and two, he's a rookie. I just don't see it. My take on it is the Browns view him as an offensive player. You better think that he is the most dynamic, explosive offensive play, non-quarterback offensive player in this draft, or you have no business taking him number two. You wouldn't play Justin Jefferson at cornerback. Look, that's what you got to expect this guy to be. I'm asking you this question right now: would you rather have Hunter, or would you rather have Garrett Wilson? I'm just not seeing the Hunter. He's a slot receiver. I think he's got great ball skills. I'm not seeing this explosion. You're not going to put him on the outside. I'm looking at this and I'm like, if the guy didn't play defense, which that has nothing to do with him being on offense. I don't understand. I get it. He's a great kid and everybody loves him. And Jeff, another thing, there's no way in heck I bring Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins hasn't been healthy in 3 years. You're going to bring him in to try to count on him for 3 years. That's just such a stretch.
That's unfortunately where they are right now. And Jim, thank you. They're looking for something at quarterback. So unfortunately, we're looking at options that might not be overly appealing. And I'll agree with you, Jim. I don't think it's overly appealing. But I can't come up with, off the top of my head, necessarily a better one right now. It's Baskin and Phelps with Jake Volnick in for Andy.